Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Let's get underway. Oh, wow.
Simply the best.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games. Right here.
For King G, where comfort is king.
2, 3, 4. Hey, ho, let's go. Triple M rocks the NRL.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Triple M, listening to the Saturday Scrum. Nathan Brown, Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdler, Tony Squires. And the Eels Thursday night did the job on Melbourne, 14 points to nil. We're now joined by the coach himself, Mr. Brad Arthur. G'day, mate.
Afternoon, how are we?
Very, very well, thank you. A few days to mull over a victory like that. I guess it's the zero that would have made you most happy.
Yeah, look, I know they had a few quality players missing out of that team, but, you know, it's something that we've been working on over the last month is our defence. Game against Manly 5 games ago, there are a few things were exposed in their defensive line, which probably, you know, being 8 wins and 1 loss at that time, we sort of papered over a couple of things. So we worked on our defence in preparation, you know, to get it right against the biggest test that we're going to come up against, which was Melbourne. And, to the boys' credit, they kept their line intact and they defended really well.
What about the Craig Bellamy? Now, his 2.5-minute press conference, it was sort of interesting. What did you make of all of that, the notion of the word milking that's gone around? You obviously disagree completely.
I didn't see Billy H's press conference, but obviously I know what happened there. Not at any stage have we talked about it as a group or a team, players trying to milk penalties or lay down on the back of a real important tackle like a crusher tackle. If the boys feel pressure on their neck and, you know, they've got some drama there, well, obviously, they're staying down. But it's never been discussed as a group, and I think it's ridiculous to challenge any of our boys on that.
Hey, Brad, Nathan Brown, mate, how you doing?
Good, Brownie, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Hey, Brad, I'm a big believer over the years that, like, coaches and players, none of us obviously discuss about laying down for penalties and milk penalties, but I believe that players learn from other players and they see a player, they might win a penalty and they think, oh, that's a pretty easy way to go. Do you agree with that or not?
Oh, well, look, I definitely agree with you, mate, as coaches. You know, people say that we try and bend the rules and come up with ways to get around, and we don't. We've got too many other things to worry about Worry about our own discipline, you know, to worry about instead of that sort of thing. Well, I think the players, you know, look, if you've got someone over the top of you 110 kilos on the back of your neck and putting pressure on, it might be a split second or something that they feel something there. Well, I'm sure that the players, every player is the same. They're going to make sure they're right before they get back to their feet.
What have you made of that, BA? Obviously, they've changed the amount of points that they're now grading with the crusher. We saw last night, I don't know whether you saw the Dragons game, but Paul Vaughan got now a couple of weeks for an incident where obviously there's two styles, isn't there, with the crusher tackle. There's the one where players are just backing into the defence and there's, you know, your guys don't have too many options. And there's the other one where people are now getting deliberately held up and then they're sort of in a second motion being put to the ground. What have you made of the rule change?
Yeah, look, I think it's for the benefit of the game and the individual players. So, it is hard when players are backing in and sometimes it's unfortunate, but we all know the rules. If we feel as we're taking players to the ground, you know, you've got to make room for their headspace. And we actually just discussed it during the week as a group as well, you know, about the grading went up. So, you know, you've got to get it right because if you don't, you know, you're definitely going to be missing a week's football.
How do you prepare for that, BA? How do you get your guys to prepare for that, like during training sessions?
When we do our contact, we've got different things. And the boys know, they know when they're in the tackle and they've got someone's head up against them and they've got to give room for before they release their head to get them down on the ground. And they practice it during we're doing our post sessions and or our tackling sessions.
Hey, Brad, Reid Marnie in the game on Thursday night, a couple of times brought him off. I know you had that extra interchange. Is it a matter of resting the legs heading into the finals, giving Ray Stone a bit more game time if there is a potential injury? What was the thinking with that?
Yeah, give Stoney some game time, which, you know, at times with the forward that we've got, they play a lot of minutes, so it's hard to get them all on, but gave Stoney some extra time. Reedy plays every minute every week in that position, racking up 60 tackles. And, you know, like as a hooker, the first thing everyone wants to do is run at the hooker, and you know, because he's the smallest bloke on the field. So, you know, just looks after him. And hopefully, you know, we might be able to do that a few times moving into the finals. And when we do need him to play 80 minutes, well, he's still got the run in his legs.
Hey, Brad, with no reserve grade and obviously the difficulty of preparing players to play, if you guys get to a stage in, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks' time where you're guaranteed a top four, would you look at giving five or six blokes that haven't played a game and risk the possibility of losing just to get them game time in case you do pick up injuries at the important end of the season?
Look, it's a good question, and, you know, it's something that's in the back of my head. We want to try and make sure we put ourselves in a position win every game. You know, I'd like to think that we're in a position, we've still got a lot of work to do, but we're in a position where we could try to finish in the top two, which, you know, gives you two home finals. So that's, you know, so we'd have to see where we're at in a couple of weeks, and it might be the matter of one or two blokes that we might be able to give a rest to. But, yeah, I don't want to, you know, make any decisions about it now until we see where we are in still a few weeks' time.
In terms of where you are, how do you feel at the moment? You had that great, powerful run at the start. Then, of course, you won games without playing as well as you would have liked, got beaten by the Dragons, then came back on Thursday night. Where do you see yourselves at the moment?
Well, this time, say last year, we're way better off than we were this time last year. We won 70% of our games and probably only won half our games at this stage last year. We're in the down the bottom. I think that, you know, before our last 7 or 8 rounds last year, we were down the bottom in terms of defensive points against us. This year, we're at the, you know, at the top there, and it's been a focus for us to improve our best and our worst. You know, the gap, we had 30s and 40s and a 60 put on us last year, and so it's been a massive focus around our defence. But now we need to, you know, I feel like that we've got the trust in our defensive system. As a playing group, we need to work on, you know, some things with our attack and look to improve that. But, you know, we need to make sure that we have got the trust in our defence, and, you know, all the boys are believing in it and working together.
Now, we've been around the game for a fair while, and I know there's no Mad Monday this year, BA, but I tell you what, I've never been involved in a season where a winger's had to do a nudie run. I mean, he must be getting nervous, Fergo, on that wing.
He's pretty disappointed in Gusso. Gusso had an opportunity to catch pass and get him one the other night, and we mucked it up on him. So I'm sure Ferg will get one before the season's out.
And then, obviously, Mike has been scoring plenty. What's the best thing about coaching him?
Oh, look, he's a great finisher. You know, we give him some space and opportunity. Very rarely do you see him butcher one, you know, and that's part of his job as a winger. And I just like the fact that, you know, from where we had him to where he is now, because he didn't know a heap about the game, and he's still got so much more to learn about it, he's only going to get better and better.
All right. Strong position for the Eels, as you said, up there in that top four. Congratulations on the win on Thursday and all the success so far this season, Brad Arthur.
All right. Thanks very much.
There he is.
See you, buddy.
Coach Brad Arthur joining us right here on the... It's a Saturday scrum. Nathan Brown is with us today, as is Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdler. My name is Tony Squires, and I have an apology to make. Last week on this very program, I said out loud that I hate the Sharks. And I've considered it all week, Brownie, and it came back to a Dragons Sharks. I've always had a bit of a friction between the two clubs. Still, I might have been sitting here when I said that. I've copped a bit of flack, as you'd expect. I don't really hate the Sharks at all. In fact, I took Jason Stevens, former Dragons player, former Sharks player, to the grand final in 2016 when they won. I stood and applauded, and I was very, very happy for them. So just making it clear, I don't hate any other club. I do love the Dragons. I don't hate the Sharks.
Are you just being nice today because the Dragons won? Although they won last week.
I'm getting used to them winning.
I reckon that's a publicity stunt all the time.
That was an exclusive apology. along with defeated Pangai Jr. A team everybody is getting into this season is the Panthers. They sit prettily on top. Were they 3 or 4 points ahead now and looking for all money like they will take out the JJ Gilton and Shield as minor premiers. You, a couple of weeks ago, Gerds, you said that was their first half of footy was the best you've seen. They keep doing the starts that, they score, they get no points against them that first 20 minutes. It's just a regular occurrence now. What did you make of them last night?
Yeah, I guess you kind of get a little bit picky when, you know, they're playing to a certain standard on a weekly basis. Your expectations get a little bit higher, and I think that's where we're all at. First 10 minutes was brewing again last night, but then kind of made a couple of errors, allowed the Sharks back into the game. Probably should have shut the Sharks out of that one altogether at some point. But all their indicators, like, you know, possession, I think that's the best in the league. Their completion rate's best in the league. The things that impress you most in games like last night is at the back end, we mentioned it with Liam Martin, was just the numbers they get around the ball defensively with their scramble and their attitude. They celebrate their tries. They really seem to be enjoying, obviously, each other's company. I'm really, it's such a shame because I understand how much the community loves that footy club, and it's been a while. You know, we're not like a Melbourne Storm or a Sydney City Roosters where every year we're making finals and doing that. So, you know, when we have those little moments of success, it's really the community gets so engaged and they thrive on it. And the fact that they can't get to the games and they can't see the boys, you know, walking around the shops and sort of, you know, get involved in their success they're having at the moment, I really think that's a shame. Take nothing away from what they're doing and, you know, how excited everyone is with how they're going at the moment. I think it's really unfortunate for the community, but they're going along nicely, Tony. There's areas where they'll improve, and I think they know where they are, but at the moment, they're ticking all the boxes.
Viliami Kikau ran over the top of Braden Trindle for that first try. He then tackled him without the ball, which is put on report. What's the latest from that?
You know what? If I was a good journo, I would have checked if he did get charged, but maybe Charlie can check for us. 1 week.
1 week.
There we go.
1 week.
1 week for
it
that.
It was brutal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Running out of the line. And
and he's a big man on a small man.
Yeah. The big men are going so well, though, Brownie, aren't they?
Well, the big men are going very well, but the small blokes playing well as well. They've both got an opportunity under the new rules, you know.
Yep.
I think we've said numbers of times, the edge back rowers and our centres have become a player again. Centres could have been, you know, a yardage player there for a fair while, and the game was very slow, and there was so much pressure put on the ball players from the inside, and blokes getting hit late. Where now, with the game quickening up, our small men can certainly pick on bigger men a bit better and can dig into the line a lot better. And, you know, those edge back rows are getting a lot of one on ones with our small men, and the centres are getting one on one with their men and able to beat their men, which is a lot more like back when Gerds was playing.
What about even like Tyro May after that season, or missed pretty much all of last year? We know the dramas that he went through, and he's come back and he's probably played about five different positions for them already, but doing a job, whether it be in the centres. I think he played on the edge a couple of weeks ago, hooker, wherever they're putting him, even someone like Tyrone is doing their job. So it's one of those things, everything is just falling into place nicely for the Panthers, but not taking anything away from them. They haven't really been tested too much on the injury front, have they? I mean, you look at the Raiders and the Roosters and what they've had to put up with. Are you concerned if they lose an Appy or a Nathan? I mean, can they still do it?
Brownie's got his theory around why they're not getting injured.
Yeah, mate, them and Parramatta have both playing outstanding footy, and full credit to both the coach and stars, but they've been legged up compared to the Melbourne Storms and Canberra's and that, because every game's been a home game. All the games are played out at Parramatta Stadium and Penrith. They've both been on one flight each, I'm pretty confident. Where the Melbourne Storm, they're flying in at midnight all the time. Canberra had their first six games away from home. And so your recovery of your players and your players' ability to keep doing the right thing and have that bit of luck is far, 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 far less, you know. But they're still playing outstanding footy. No one would deny that. But it's a huge advantage not flying in at 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, Melbourne Storm had to relocate their whole club.
Yeah.
That was after they couldn't play at home, you know. So, you know, these flights and, as I said, no coincidence, the Raiders are playing at some home games now, and they've got some blokes back from injury, and now they're starting to surge up the ladder. It's no coincidence at all.
But they've got some good depth. I mean, they lost their way a little bit last night when Kikau went off. They tried to give him a bit of a rest, and now he'll get another week's rest, you know, with suspension next week. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. We spoke about how Ivan's implemented, you know, rest around training and days off there as opposed to games, so that seems to be working well for him. Appy, obviously, on the other hand, he's got a bit of a calf strain and he's really important to what they do. But they've got young Mitch Kenny as well as Tyrone May that can fill those roles. And maybe it's good that some of those guys do get a little bit of game time in the next couple of weeks just in preparation for the back end of the season.
And I reckon Ivan's recognised he's probably in a situation where he doesn't need to rest his players from playing because of the I suppose, the luck of what's happened under the virus, where he hasn't had to travel very much, and they're sort of playing most of their games in Sydney or at home, so their recovery is very good. But if you look at a Melbourne Storm, Melbourne Storm have rested players on many occasions this year. Like Papenhuyzen wasn't hurt the other week, but they gave him a week off. Finucane wasn't hurt, but they gave him a week. They've been given players weeks off because they had no choice, because if they kept going, they'd break, you know, and unfortunately they've still picked up their share of injuries at the moment, the Storm.
And is that your take on the story of last week about the number of injuries? A lot of it was kind of sheeted home to the new rules and the pace of the game, but the lack of recovery time?
No doubt lack of recovery time has definitely played a part in people flying into places and flying out at midnight and one in the morning and that type of stuff. Certainly got to have some impact because it's something that we haven't done. And there's no doubt, you know, the change of the game and people adapting is going to take a little bit, but also no preseason. Players had a preseason, they were locked up for 8 weeks, come back, train for 2 weeks and start playing. So, you know, the players' bodies wouldn't have been as prepared as well as what they are in any other season. The rules did change, but the big one for me is the lack of recovery for players at different stages.
No reserve grade too, so that some players coming in that hadn't played in a while, they're getting injured as well in their first week back or second week back, so that makes a difference.
They're lacking fitness, Em, but they're also lacking their timing. Yeah. So their coordination's out, and when you get your coordination, your timing out, you get hurt.
Jerome Luai, as we've got Nathan Cleary, we know how well he's going, but Luai has been terrific, Gerds.
Yeah, outstanding. And Brownie and I called the game last night, and I think the balance of his game is really good now. Like when he came into first grade last year, he came in as a running player. But, you know, he's really worked hard on his kicking game in the off-season, or maybe it's always been there, but it wasn't utilised as much last season. And defensively now, he's sort of put on some weight in the off-season, so he's a physical presence. And, you know, good sides don't have halves that get spotted up defensively. I mean, as a weakness, they're always going to, you know, get more traffic their way because they want the energy to go out of their legs when they've got the football. But they've got no weaknesses there on the edges defensively, and that's a massive thing for Penrith because Nathan's such a good defender on the right side, and Jerome's such a good defender on that left side. There's no weaknesses, and they've got some players coming back. Now, Kickout, he's probably going to miss that 1 week. I'm not sure whether he'll take, you know, the guilty plea or whatever he'll do there. There might be a case that he thinks he can win. But they've got some players coming back over the next couple of weeks. Capewell, I'm not sure how far away he is. Now, he's a representative.
Yep.
Back rower, so he could potentially, you know, fill that hole there. You've got To'o, who's a really good winger, just developing nicely over the last 12 months. Now, Naden's doing a fantastic job there as well. You've got May in the centres and you've got Farah coming back. So there's going to be some decisions that Ivan needs to make over the next coming weeks, all good ones. But at the same time, he's got some guys not just playing well at the moment, but guys coming back from injuries that are going to put pressure in key positions.
Good. With Capewell, I'm a fan of his, as you just mentioned. He's a rep player and he's a player of great utility value. How do they have Tyrone May and Capewell on their bench as utility players when you've got Ted Varno's doing a great job, obviously. He's a premiership winner.
Yep.
Lianu, great leg speed.
Really good, isn't he?
Moses Leota, good leg speed.
Yeah.
So they've got all these blokes, and you've got Tyrone May who provides that utility value.
Yeah.
Like the young kid we spoke to before, I'm not coaching Penrith, but yep. I can't see Ivan not picking Liam Martin. And he's obviously going to pick Kickout, isn't he?
Yep.
So where do you see someone like Capewell? He's a good player, isn't he?
Yeah, like I think Tyrone May is obviously going to cover dummy half like he did last night, and Capewell can cover the centres as well. I'm not sure Capewell is going to be able to cover in the halves, whereas May can. So he's going to have to make a decision on who's more valuable in that spot.
One of the Warriors' best players for 2 or 3 weeks was Jack Hetherington.
Yeah.
Like he's suspended at the minute.
And
but
he's now back back training with the Panthers again. Brian To'o will be...
Billy Burns is also doing a really good job when he gets an opportunity.
Good young player, Billy Burns, yeah.
Matt Burton's not getting a look in at the moment. So there's a production line there and it needs to be managed.
Brian To'o is coming back next week.
Mm.
So he was potentially going to play, but Ivan had said we'll give him one more week. Capewell, Ivan said, will start training with them again this week. So probably he'll miss one more game and then probably come back the following week.
Coach's Corner, just around the corner, along with Believe It or Not on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M, Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Ryan Girdler, Emma Lawrence, Tony Squires, and most importantly for this segment, Nathan Brown.
The Coach's Corner with Nathan Brown.
What's going on, Brownie? What are you thinking of?
Today was Charlie's great idea to talk about what influence... the wrong type of player can have on your club culturally.
Oh, right, okay.
Or success, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
So from my experiences, and I don't think there's a coach out there that's coached long term that hasn't made the mistake of bringing someone in wrong. I think if you spoke to all coaches, they'd all tell you if you coach long enough, you'll make, you certainly will get it wrong at some stage. But the two biggest downsides are for a club when you do bring someone in who has a, let's say, a bad influence. Firstly, if you do go through a bit of a losing trot, and the coach is being a little hard on certain sections of the team or certain players, what the player with that the bad element will do is he'll go and recruit them and get a batch of players that are all of a sudden culturally not good.
Yeah.
And if they congregate enough people, the coach will get the risole basically. So that's the price you can pay for doing it. The other downside to it is if you bring someone in who's, you know, let's say not only a bad influence in that way, but bad off the field, like socially in different areas,
mm-hmm.
If your club lacks leadership, if you don't have strong leaders at your club, that player will, again, he'll recruit blokes that are sitting on the breadline about, do I want to be 100% in as a professional player or do I want to be a bit more of a socializer? Because the socializing is, that's far easier than the hard work, you know? So, again, he'll recruit players and all of a sudden some of your better younger players' careers can be destroyed, you know. And I won't mention a player's name, but I know of one player that's played at a number of clubs, and every time he left that club, the club was down the bottom of the table with shocking problems. And generally what happens to the coach?
Gone.
He's gone. The new coach comes in and says, well, I need to get rid of this bloke, and all of a sudden the club goes up the table again.
When you're bringing in players to your club, though, how can you – I mean, you can't always get it right, but how do you ensure you've done all of your research on the type of character they are? Like, what extent do you go to in calling people that potentially have worked with them before?
Well, basically, when you work at a club, there's generally, everyone's got some tentacles involved with someone at some other club. So you always talk to people who've worked with them. It doesn't mean you don't take, like, every club, you know, our two best sporting clubs of in the past 20 years have been the Roosters and Melbourne in rugby league, quite clearly by a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those clubs have both often taken blokes on second or third chance, but they don't give them long. If they bugger up again, they'll just go, you're gone. They won't mess about with them, you know. But it's not that you won't give them an opportunity, but if you do give someone an opportunity like that and you know it's wrong, you've just got to clear it out straight away. You know, if you don't, you'll end up getting cleared out.
You can obviously make decisions a little bit more leniently when you've got a really core senior group, yeah?
If you've got a great senior group,
you can take a risk on a guy.
You can. It's much, much more likely.
So if you're at the Melbourne Storm and when they had Smith and Slater and Cronk, basically you're bringing anyone in there knowing that not just your work, but the work that your team is going to do is going to have a really positive impact on the career of this person coming down.
Definitely. One of the great success stories is the Swans, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they had that Bloods culture and
no dickhead policy.
Yeah, and everyone says they have the no dickhead policy, but if you've got good leadership, some of these clubs do sign a bloke that's got a bit of dickhead in him, but the leaders in the group help them improve, you know, and if they don't improve, they behave their way out of the system, basically. And if you look at the Swans, they've taken a few chances over the course of that journey where I think they made the playoffs 17 years in a row or 16 out of 17 years, which is unheard of in AFL because of the draft system. And that was due to their great leadership. And they'd actually recruit a player in, and a senior player could pick that player up from the airport and actually on the way back to the office, let him know how things work here. And if you don't buy in, you'll be out the door, you know? So the strong leadership, right, Gerds, helps that player actually mature and actually achieve what everyone wants him to achieve.
So when you're going in to build a roster like you are now with the Warriors, is that what you're looking at first to get a good core senior group or talent?
There's no group out there that's successful at the end and no sustained success that doesn't have good leadership. It just doesn't work. You know, a club can have one of those years where it works, everything falls into place, but they won't last. They won't last the test of time up there. No chance.
Brett Kirk was one of those guys from the Swans who used to go out and pick up the young blokes from the airport.
And like,
amazing.
Yeah, culture's the flavoured word in the last sort of 20 years. But basically all it is leadership. It's not culture, it's actually leadership.
In terms of those checks and balances, I know the NFL, the NBA, they go a long way in terms of, you know, visiting the family of potential players. More, I guess, the younger guys and blokes have been around for quite some time. There's a lot of time spent on that. How far do NRL clubs go into that kind of background checking?
Yeah, most clubs will do a lot of checking, yeah. And as I said, everyone does, yeah. There's no player these days that's signed without someone doing a reasonable background check on them. But as I said, it doesn't mean you don't take a chance on someone, but you just know what you know you've covered your bases. And if you do take that chance, you actually know what the risk is.
Do you think you get to the point, I mean, everyone, you've admitted at times you've brought a player and potentially it was the wrong move. Do you get to a point where, you know, someone like Bellyache, do you think he gets to the point where, you know, he now knows what he's doing, or he still plays that you think maybe even he regrets at times bringing in?
Oh, well, if you spoke to Bellyache privately, and I've never asked him this question, but I'll guarantee you over the course of his coaching career, he's brought three or four bad eggs in that he would have thought, why did I get them in here? But what he would have done was he would have got them out quick. Mm. That's the reality of it.
Is that the fun part of it, the jigsaw puzzle, trying to get that group together?
Oh, look, it's not as easy as what everyone thinks, that's for sure, you know, and certain people obviously... Yeah, I mean, was it Wayne Bennett or Jack Gibson said the best coaches are the best recruiters, you know? So, you know, those type of character traits certainly help a club have sustained success. As I said, a club can get a mob of talented blokes that lacks a bit of leadership and have a bit of a golden run, you know, and things might work out for you, but they always will capitulate if you don't have that right character at your club.
What's the sell to get people that are established in Australia overseas?
That's been a difficult task for the Warriors. You know, if you look at the good Aussie recruits they've got over there at the time. I mean, Steve Price was in the prime of his career, and they got Steve Price over there. Was obviously a great signing. Kevin Campion went there. After winning, you know, I played with Campo at Saints, and Campo played in the grand finals at Saints, and he went to the Broncos and won a few grand finals. Mm-hmm. And Campo was coming towards that latter part of his career, and he went to the Warriors, and they played in the grand final. And these are the types of people that, you know, success seems to follow them, don't they? Because they bring the right attitude to work, you know. So, you know, for the Warriors, the big thing for us is the Warriors are always successful when they've got a good crop of their own young players coming through, which is a far tougher task these days because there's so many more clubs, obviously. Well, every club's got talent scouts over there and runs coaching camps over there. So, you know, being able to maintain a good crop of your own players and then finding the right type of, you know, handful of Aussie players to take over there, that's the challenge, you know. And it's not an easy challenge, but it's one we look forward to trying.
I loved it. Another fascinating Coach's Corner. Thank you so much, Nathan Brown. We're going to play a bit of Believe It or Not next, and there's a new segment coming up. Stick around for M's DMs on the Saturday Scrum.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
And it's nice to have company, and it's always nice as we head in this direction.
Believe it or not, 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 not. Believe it or not.
All right, a few little issues that I'm going to throw at you and just see whether you believe them or not. Let's begin with what has been, I guess, the biggest story throughout the week. I can't believe we haven't touched on it yet. Perhaps people have spoken. They're all talked out on the Kevin Proctor issue. But I'm going to go there. Sure. Believe it or not, Kevin Proctor should have been suspended for longer than the 4 weeks he got, Ryan Girdler.
Now, I think the 4 weeks was kind of good for... I think the punishment fitted the crime, Tony, to be honest. I was happy with it. I know that there's a lot of people out there saying that if you bite someone, you can't nibble. What's the difference between a nibble and a bite? And we need to eradicate it from the game. I don't think the game has a problem with biting these days. I think it was a unique situation where everyone was kind of right. You know, like Sean Johnson got nipped, but he also had his arm in a position where it was sort of jammed. It was kind of jammed into Proctor's mouth, and he kind of said, well,
forced
get out of here.
Nibble, so
it was more mouthing, was no like a dog.
I think 4 weeks is okay, maybe a little harsh, but I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I thought it was more like a puppy dog doing the mouthing. You know he's not really going to
It was a weird situation. He didn't take a chunk out of him.
No, there was just red mark. Not that anybody bites people.
Especially my girls. Yeah. Stop biting each other.
All right, so you about right, you think. What about you, Em?
Yeah, I'm fine with it just because it didn't seem like an obvious bite, and a lot of people disagree, say a bite's a bite, but I agree. It kind of got forced. So Sean Johnson's essentially, he forced it into Proctor's mouth. And at the time, I think Johnson probably regrets the way he reacted, probably was trying to get a penalty straight away. But I'm fine with it.
But if he's found guilty of then 4 weeks seems...
Force it into someone's mouth, Tony, intentional, you get a nibble, you
at times
it.
There have been intentional, you know, bites in the past or more obvious bites. I think that was a very grey area type one.
Okay. Nathan Brown?
I thought they got that one wrong. He had no teeth marks in his arm. So if you bite someone, you got teeth marks. And if he had no teeth marks in his arm, I reckon he's a bit stiff. Send-off sufficient for me.
So the thing is, the send-off was quite damaging. They were it was 12 all at the time. They lose the game. So I mean, that kind of send-off sufficient.
Yeah, like if you bite someone, like we've all had our kids bite people and we bite each other and there's teeth marks. And from what we've been told, there was
just
no...
talk me through your teeth marks. What if you latched on before, Brownie?
I probably have. Over the years, when I was a young bloke, probably bit one of my brothers, or they bit me or something. Sure. Retaliated. Sure,
what did you make of the Sean Johnson method, though, of, you know, saying that, first of all, straight after the game, saying nothing happened, and then to come out and say, well, I've watched the video and I've seen that I probably reacted poorly. It wasn't so much a bite. You were okay with that?
Yeah, look, Sean Johnson, from what I understand, is a terrific young bloke, you know, from what I understand. And he would have, you know, at the end of the day, Proctor going off, as you said, the score was 12-all. They got a great result and his mate got sent off for biting, you know, because obviously they're quite close. They played a lot of test footy together. So I had no issue with what he'd done at all. And, you know, a lot of players over the journey sort of just want to leave most things on the field. And I think if it was a genuine, real bite, you know, I'm sure that... Johnson would have had probably a different approach to it.
I quite liked Kevin Proctor's quote, though. I mean, he's saying, I didn't bite anybody, but I'm going to fight to the death to clear my name. he was very intent on it. All right.
That's not good for his career. He's looking for a new club as well, and he's played over 250 games. And, you know, I think...
Never been suspended, has he, Gerd?
I don't think he's... I think maybe he's been on report once or twice before.
And that record helped with the getting 4 weeks. Would have been longer. 25%, I think, he got for his...
It's not a smear you want next to your reputation, especially when you're looking for a new club.
And it was in his 250th game. But the Titans, what's the latest? They did actually... there was talk that they would, you know, want him to hang around for another year. I guess that's a story that will continue. All right. Believe it or not, Emma Lawrence, the Bulldogs should go all in on chasing Brandon Smith.
Well, I guess it depends on, I mean, what position they're looking at him playing. I know, Brownie, often you say that a number of times you've said on this show that you think where he's playing at the moment is his best position, a lock and not necessarily a hooker. There were rumours they'd need. I mean, they've got Nick Kotrick already coming to the club at the moment, Jeremy Marshall-King. They could bring someone like, it always depends on Cameron Smith. Rumours that maybe if Cameron Smith didn't stay at Melbourne, would they get Harry Grant? I think not as a... I think he's someone you want at your club, but to be honest, I don't think the Storm would let Brandon Smith go.
Okay.
So, yes, go after him. No, I don't think it'll happen.
Brownie?
I'm a terrific player, and if the, you know, the Dogs have been talking about for a lot of years now about bringing back the Dogs of War. If you want to bring back the Dogs of War, you certainly sign Brandon Smith, that's for sure. I think he makes any football club better. I like him myself personally as playing how he plays for the Storm and a bit of dummy half as a preference. If you want him to play dummy half, obviously your style of play would be a bit different than what it was if you had a Mick Innes or a Cameron Smith type player.
Good.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I love the... I don't think there's anyone in the game that doesn't like the way that he plays, and I think he'd be a great club. And I'm not sure he's the dummy half that they need because he's obviously spend a little bit of time there when Cameron's away, and he's a brilliant runner of the football. And I think sometimes, you know, he gets in a dummy half, it takes away some of the other parts of his game that are so important. But if they've got the cap room and they can afford, you know, a dummy half and a Brandon Smith to come in, and I think it's a good play.
All right, I like this. Josh Adokar should not try and play fullback.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Hang on, let me try and work that out.
Yeah, I know, it's a little bit...
Josh Adokar should not stick to the wing?
I believe it. I believe that he shouldn't try and play fullback. Yeah, I think he's an out-and-out winger. He's got lots of energy, and maybe he could surprise me and get in the back there and do a really good job. But I just think he's so good at what he does. He's a specialist winger, and I think he should stay there.
Why does everyone, all of the centres and the wingers, they want to just turn into fullback?
I can tell you why. It's the cash, the green folding stuff in.
But aren't you better off being the best winger in the game than an average fullback? Really? Or you don't care if you get the money, it doesn't matter. I think he should stay. I like him. He's one of the best wingers in the game. And then so many, when they make the transition, it's not just their attacking ability, but it's their... defence, and the best fullbacks in the game, aren't they the ones that can organise that defensive line the best? And that's what Billy Slater was so good at. That's what James Tedesco has started to add to his game as well, whether or not Josh Adokar has that.
Well, Brandon,
maybe not.
When players decide to make that change, and plenty have done it, Latrell Mitchell, for example, does he, by playing fullback, and I know he wasn't in the Origin at the end of last season, does he harm his chances or in being picked as a centre if he decided, you know, I want to be a fullback?
Look, if Latrell's playing really, really well, they'll find a spot for him. They'll just move him to centre. He could easily go back there and play. We've seen over the years in Origin that, you know, at times different coaches have just found the best players, and what position they've played at club level, they may play different in Origin. So
Freddie did that last year. He had Jack White and Tommy Trebojevic in the centres. Yeah. So
they're good players. They find a way to make it work, you know. And if Latrell's playing fullback for South, but the Ted's fit and they're picking Teddy, you know, if he's playing well enough and he's ticking the boxes for Freddie would just put him in the centres, quite simply, yeah. On the wing, whatever, to get him out there. They're the best players.
So just pick six fullbacks and give them different numbers.
Exactly right. Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Should he try and play fullback?
Look, one is I don't know how his fitness levels are. If he's very, very fit player. Look, I mean, I play with a lot of Indigenous boys up home, and I've coached a lot of Indigenous boys. The whole lot of them have got a great game awareness. They understand where space is. They can all catch and pass. I've never seen an Aboriginal boy that hasn't got good hands. So the fact, you know, I'm sure if he wanted to make it work, if he was fit enough, that he can make it work there.
All right, there is your Believe It or Not, M's DMs, coming up shortly on the Saturday Scrum. Thanks to King G.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Before we get to M's DMs, just something off the back of Believe It or Not we didn't get to was the fact that, well, the story that Cam Smith has been offered a 2-year contract at the Titans, which would, you know, interesting idea, whether he would stay at Melbourne to finish that glittering career, already 400-odd games old, but he's playing great footy. What do you, if he's, oh, there's a story that his wife Barb has been shopping around for some property up in that kind of area. The kids are at school. The kids may well have been at school because they've gone up there into the bubble anyway and have been, and, you know, Victoria obviously has been struggling so much with COVID-19. So you don't have to read anything into either of those things. I mean, they may well have enough money to buy investment properties all over the country, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Do you like the idea of him finishing at the Melbourne Storm and then going through into coaching or whatever he wants to do? Or is it a good fit to be playing with the Titans?
I like the story about him. You know, yep. I remember when Wally went up and played for the Seagulls there for a couple of years at the back end of his career. And I think Cam is in physical, has enough physical conditioning to go up and play for another couple of years on the base of what he's been able to perform like this year. So it'd be a nice story for the Gold Coast. A little bit disappointing. We all like to see those one team players, don't we, to finish the career down there and stay involved with the Storm. But, I mean, maybe he's had enough of Melbourne. He's been down there for a hell of a long time. And once he finishes with the family back up north, maybe that's where he wants to go, to greener pastures.
Yeah. What do you think, Granny?
Oh, look, if there's no truth in it, it's a great story, and it's given everyone plenty to talk about. And, you know, just for Melbourne Storm, obviously, you know, to have a player like that for that long's been obviously a blessing for both the Storm and Cameron, and for Cameron to play in a successful team every year. I'd hate to see Melbourne Storm lose Harry Grant. I don't think it'd be fair. They've, you know, put some pathways in place to replace their great players. Obviously, you know, they've had Papenhuyzen there to replace Billy, which has worked out great. You know, they've got Harry Grant there as a backup to replace Cameron. So, you know, all going well, I'd love to see Harry Grant be the next 10-year hooker at Melbourne Storm. Cameron Smith, the way he's playing, could he keep playing? I don't see why he has to retire unless he wants to. He's not, doesn't look like he's playing any worse today than what he played 2 years ago to me. So would it be a great story for the Gold Coast? Oh, it'd be terrific, wouldn't it?
It's interesting what the motivation, though, would be for him. I mean, it's not, you know, you wouldn't imagine financial is a strong consideration for him, but, you know, if you're playing in, what is it, 5 years, last 5 years, Melbourne have finished either one or two on the table. They constantly play finals, and no small part thanks to him. But it's going to be, the next 2 years may well be improving for the Titans, but you don't see them being challenging for a premiership next year. What's the motivation to do it?
To and another challenge, really, and trying to help a club build. And, I mean, he's obviously confident that, well, I mean, if he took it, he'd be confident that they could do something and they could make the finals. They've got Tino going there, David Fifita.
Yep.
They've got lots of young players there as well. So I think he wouldn't do it, you'd imagine, if he was expecting them to be at the bottom of the ladder. I think either story, there's a bit of romanticism to the one club player. Also a bit romantic to have him go and save this club that's been struggling for so long. The biggest signing in their history. So I'd be happy with either.
All right, it is time, ladies and gentlemen, for this. Slide in my DMs. M's DMs. M's
DMs. It's a nice little opener.
Yeah, better than Reedy's. Nice. It is better than Reedy's. Reedy will be joining us very shortly alongside Sterlo as well. I'm interested to see Sterlo's DMs. Look, I've just only noticed my wife showed me where the DMs are on the phone. You know, I never went to direct messages before. You know, just look the pictures on the screen.
Did you know what a DM was?
Well, a direct message. I didn't know until yesterday. But I'm a grandfather. But I do, I decided, we, you know, with your permission, Charlie and I did go through your phone. Just to go through to some of the DMs to see what's been going on. Because, you know, you've been single now for some time. And there's a bit of interest out there. Can I just read some of these for you?
Absolutely.
And maybe you, if I read, we do four or five of these direct messages to you, and perhaps you have to choose. I know you haven't responded to any of them, but maybe the best one
we'll respond to.
We'll get a response. Okay.
Let's do it.
Hey, Em, I'm writing a book, but need your help. It's a phone book, and I'm missing your number. That's just a lame pickup
line.
That's
lame.
That's just
That's out.
That is so lame.
Sorry.
Well, 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 I know you probably won't see this. That is always how they start, isn't it? Well, 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 I know you probably won't see this, but if I was a pirate, you could be my treasure.
Equally as lame.
What does first base and your inbox have in common? I'm terrible at sliding into both of them, but I'm still going to give it a try. That is rubbish. any of these tickle your
fancy? Oh, yeah, that really tickled my fancy, that one.
Hey, Em, saw your pretty face on Channel 10 last night. Inspired my wife and I to play some Twister.
That's from a Tony Squires. Is this the reason you wanted to bring this segment up?
I tell you, I did a hammy in the first move. girl, you're not a snack, you're a three-course meal. Oh, are there really sickos out there like this?
You need to give them some tips on how to be romantic.
Okay.
Tony, what do you think?
All right, I will. Wait a second. Hold the phone. Hey, Em, my mum has the perfect solution for your cracked heel. See, obviously they know you, this person, has the perfect solution for your cracked heels. Throw out the cream and marry me.
They personalise that. You know, I struggle with my feet. My heels are very crusty. I have to put your Lactol cream on them. So I'm really selling myself right now to all the single men out there. But because they personalise that message and it really, you know, hit home straight to the heart, that is the winner.
Mm. All right, whoever that is, you are getting a direct message back from Emma Lawrence.
Wendell Saylor.
In isolation. Yeah,
Peter Sterling joins us next on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.